Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I have something very interesting and very different and very unique for you. This person that you're about to meet is probably the best kept secret in magic. Now, this person who you're about to meet is a speaker. He coaches speakers. He's a magician performing at a very high level. He's passionate about performing. He's passionate about teaching other people about performance. He's very successful from a branding and a business point of view. And I guarantee you almost nobody watching this will have heard of him. However, you probably have heard of his business partner, Paul Martin. This person, along with Paul, runs the Pro Magic Academy. I am very lucky to have him on the channel. We're going to be talking about his career. We're going to be talking about his approach to magic and his approach to business and a little bit about the Pro Magic Academy as well. I am, of course, talking about John Ensor. How are you doing, John?
Hi there, I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks very much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Mate, you're more than welcome. Thank you. I know you're a bit busy. I know you've got 1,000 things going on. So thanks for taking time. I really appreciate it. And like I said, a lot of people aren't going to know who you are, but you are very, very successful within this industry as a magician. You perform at a very high level. I know you're very passionate about performing. We're going to cover all of that. And this is going to be a really interesting interview for me as well, because normally when I interview somebody, I know them really well inside out and back to front. And I don't know you that well, other than the last week or so that I've been researching into you. So this is going to be as interesting for me as it is for everybody watching as well. I'm excited. But look, we're going to start at the very beginning, if that's okay. So we're going to give people a frame of reference and just talk a little bit about who you are and how you got into magic, because your journey into magic is quite different to anybody else that I probably interviewed. So can we start off by talking about your origin story, John? Can we talk about how you found your way into magic?
Okay. Right. I don't want to get too much into this. But it is a little bit different. And at the core of the difference here is the fact that I grew up in a family which were quite separate from the rest of the world. Okay, so when I was growing up, I had no TV. I had no contact with the outside world, pretty much. We had no radio, no newspapers at home, which is a completely different story and quite an interesting one. But it meant that my starting point in magic was just from the idea of what a magician is, right? Mm. And that meant that it was the idea of a magician, somebody a little bit suave and you know, a little bit of a character, a fascinating person. That was kind of the idea of a magician. I remember very clearly reading Roald Dahl's book about the pickpocket. Roald Dahl wrote a short story about a pickpocket who was driving with somebody and he had managed to tie their shoelaces together without noticing or remove their shoelaces or something. And the idea of this kind of ability fascinated me. So I was interested in this character, the magician, and I remember from the age of maybe five, I pointing to a character in an old Usborne book, Chikili's book, and saying, I want to be a magician, you know. But and then I got a magic set. And I went to the library and I found a couple of magic books, and the library only had maybe three. One of them was Peter Eldin's book, I think, a Peter Eldin book about magic, which was brilliant. But that was all the reference I had in terms of learning tricks. So based on that, I started to learn magic tricks and did shows at school when I was 11, like kids do. But the point here is that I'd never seen another magician. I hadn't even seen a kids entertainer until I was, I think, 12. And I remember seeing a kids entertainer and being deeply disappointed that they weren't doing sawing someone in half or doing anything spectacular. I was like a bit irritated by the jokes, you know, but I was too old for that kids show. It was probably one designed for preschool kids, you know. Mm-hmm. But I really was fascinated by performance and entertainment. I was 16, I think, and I had managed to find Davenport's magic and bought some billiard balls or something. So mm-hmm. then I was doing some magic tricks at school and met another magician. And basically, I had very little knowledge of magic, but I knew some tricks and did those quite well. And that was enough for me because I wanted to be a magician. So then I started to sort of say I was a magician, take a few sort of professional gigs. And I met a magician once who said to me, you only need 5 tricks to be a professional magician. And that stuck, and it sticks to this day. And that's what I would say to people to this day. I don't know if that's a standard saying amongst magicians. I don't know. Have you heard that before, Frank?
There's a saying within the magic industry, which is an amateur will perform 1,000 tricks once, while a professional will perform 5 tricks 1,000 times.
That is good.
So yeah, that's kind of the expression that most people tend to use.
That's what I say. I thought that was my quote. But there's a lot in that. But then the thing is that I think my motivation was I wanted to be a magician, right? Mm-hmm. In people's eyes, rather than my motivation being I want to learn loads of tricks. I mean, of course, and then I would try to work out tricks. I tried to invent tricks. And it wasn't really, and as I say, when I was 16, I met a couple of other people who were interested in magic and got sort of some contact with the magic world, even sort of via other people. There was a magic book by Wilson, a complete book of magic or something, which somebody lent me, and that really changed my mind-blowing, changed my perspective. And I met Sam Strange and Richard Young, who lived in Oxford at the time, and they sort of, so I was like, went to them like quite cocky. I'm a professional magician. I got quite, you know, I was getting all the family shows in the Oxford area. You know, I felt quite confident I was the best thing out there. And I worked out some of David Blaine's tricks, you know. And then Sam Strange was like, but you do know about the double lift, you know. and so they taught me really. So, I mean, I remember seeing the ring flight, which is something I love performing to this day. But I had never heard of that until I think it was... Sam Strange or Richard Young that did that, and I was like, wow, you can buy something like that, you know. So
that's a very unique way to get to that point, that because most people that I speak to, they've spent years studying and learning new tricks and buying books, and then they go and do a professional gig. But you jumped straight in there with a very limited knowledge and a very limited repertoire, even before you knew sort of the basic double lift. That's incredible that you were doing so well and getting so many shows and what's interesting about it is the fact that a lot of magicians say, hey, it's all about the trick. You know, a lot of magicians are searching for that latest and greatest trick that's going to make them a star. I need this trick because if I buy this trick, that's what's going to make me successful. Whilst you hear another bunch of people saying, well, actually, it's not the trick, it's the person, and it's how you put that across. And it's interesting that that was your approach right from the very beginning, before you even knew much about this community.
Well, I think, do you know what, I haven't really thought about it like that before, but a couple of things from what you just said. One thing is, the reason I didn't, that I went out there and started performing before I knew any tricks, because no one told me I couldn't, you know? No one, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I know that can be a recipe for disaster, but it is also a kind of a point as well. The audience, of course, they don't know. You know, if I use a Svengali deck, they can be blown away by that if I present it the right way. They don't know that I could have forced a card a different way or what have you, you know. So that's sort of one side of it. But the other thing which is interesting about this is that concept that you just mentioned of, rather than searching for the trick that's going to make the difference, that's going to lift up my show, that's going to make me worth bigger fees or help me to get that gig that I want. We invest so much in tricks, don't we? We go out there and we spend thousands and thousands. And yet people think, or we've had, there's been comments, you know, that people find it hard to invest, say, £1,000 in themselves, in a course, in learning better to be a better performer. That's a much harder investment for people to make than to buy a gimmick. Yeah. And yet it's actually there where the difference is made. And that's a bit of the ethos of the Pro Magic Academy, is that you invest in yourself rather than investing in tricks and props. Yeah. And in the rest of the world, there's a, you know, in the rest of the business world, for example, in other fields, there's much more of an understanding of that investing in yourself is really valuable. And I think that there is a space for that in magic, for sure, you know. So certainly my focus through those early years, before I knew there's more tricks to learn, was all, of course, on the performance. And that's, and the character, and this idea I had of the person I wanted to be. And funnily enough, it's so much of the secrets in magic. I mean, my TEDx talk, I sort of mentioned this, and I reveal it a little bit, but so much of the difference in whether someone's blown away by a trick, right? Because there's one thing, you can fool someone with a trick, right? And if you follow a trick, the instructions in most tricks you can buy, people will kind of be fooled. But will it be blown away? You know, will it be an experience for them where they talk about it for 20 years? That comes down to the performance. And so the difference between an amateur magician and a professional magician in the minds of the public, right? Obviously, the real difference is whether or not they get paid. But in the minds of the audience who are watching somebody, it's just, how much was I blown away? How much did that magical moment affect me? That tells them whether how good you are or not, you know? It really does to a lot. And now I'm talking purely about the magic side. Obviously, yeah, how well you own the stage, how funny you are, that all counts as well. But it's how well you control the experience that the audience is having, which is going to decide how good you are as a magician every single time. And that's why performing a trick many times is really important. But it's not just that you do it again and again, but it's that if you decide that this trick represents who I am and what I want to be as an artist, then you should invest. And there again, it's about investment, not in terms of money, but in terms of time and effort. You invest in doing that trick again and again and perfecting it and working out what it is about your personality and your natural way of communicating that can lift that trick and make it work in the optimal way, so that you master not only the moves, but you've really understood the psychology of why that trick works and why it works when you do it, you know? So the trouble is, we're given so much of that automatically. You know, let's say you get the professor's nightmare, or whatever it is, the three rope trick, you know, and you do it with the standard text or whatever is in the routine you get, and it will work every time, right? It'll be great. It'll be fine, to put it that way, all right? And that's good. That's brilliant when you're starting up, of course. And I did that when I was first starting up. That was one of the ones in the books, of course. And I loved it. But you haven't necessarily yourself understood why that really fools people. Do you know what I mean? You've just done the psychology of why it works, as well as the mechanics of why it works. Maybe are built into the routine. I've just plucked that trick out of the air. It may not be the best example, but there's a lot of routines that are like that. You get a routine, you know, it's brilliant because they did it and it's been brilliant for years. You do it and it's pretty good, you know? And then, you know, it's not brilliant like the first guy did it, but it's pretty good. And you get a good feeling and you fooled someone. You think, I can do this. And you feel like you're the big star when you go on the stage, you know? Yeah. But you've never really understood it, you know. And even you see this sometimes, magicians are performing something, you realize that they've taken away the premise somehow. They haven't understood the trick and what it's really trying to do. So when they've adapted it a bit, the whole trick has lost its point. I mean, you get someone does a really lengthy mind read, you know, and then they reveal that they predicted it. It's like, well, what are you doing? For me, that's terribly annoying. You haven't understood what it is. You haven't known what it is you're trying to show them. If you first spent ages, you know, reading body language to work out what it is, and then you said, and I wrote it down before we started, you know? It's like, where's the logic in that? I'm not saying you can't spend time doing a read and then have a prediction, but you have to manage that in the right way so that it's logical for the person performing it. Now I now just got into I've gone down a rabbit hole here, Craig, but I'm quite passionate about not just picking up a trick and doing it, but finding that magic which works for me. You know, I don't really want to go into metas now, but there are there are so many tricks as well where there's a simpler solution or something, or where you get some artist just catches a trick and makes it their own. And it just seems so natural, it just seems to flow when they do it, you know? And it's not like, oh, I'm doing my show, I'm doing this, and oh, now I'm in a different character, I'm doing another routine. I mean, think of the very best performers, like Derren Brown in a theatre show. He everything he does, it's him personally doing it, you know, it's and experiencing it with you or whatever it is, you know, telling you a story. And there's something special about that. So all this is the sort of thing that magicians should be striving for and looking to find and learn, rather than, you know, where's the latest gimmick. And then, you know, we get this, and I don't want to, you know, it's I don't mind how people enjoy their magic, right? So I can sound a bit preachy at times, because I'm passionate about the performance of magic to real live audiences. I'm working out there on stages, people are paying to watch it. That's what I'm all about, right? Now, I know there's a lot of people who are out there who enjoy magic, just they enjoy the tricks, they enjoy learning new tricks. That's fine, carry on with that, you know? So I'm not trying to have a bone to pick with them, but I'm just saying that if you want to be successful on this corporate stage, you want to be successful as a magician and make money at it, performing for lay people, then I believe you need to be more passionate about your performance, your persona, your character, your personal brand, and building these things up. And that's where the Pro Magic Academy is also directing people, at least one of the elements of the Pro Magic Academy.
I want to talk about all of that. But before I do, when you were 16 and you realized that performance was so important, did you, like, I know you went to university, were you studying performance at university, or from a personal development point of view, did you go out and like look for personal development in performing and branding? Or is that something that you just kind of figured out as you became more and more passionate about performing?
That is a very good question. I wasn't planning to be a professional magician when I went to school and university. I mean, I was being a professional magician, and I love that. Later on, when I was a bit more established, I did hire a theatre director, for example, to come and look at me perform. Spent quite a bit of money on a day with them, which had some results, not as much as I was hoping at the time. But other than that, I've not had any proper studying, proper training in those fields. I've studied, I went to college, I was going to be a teacher.
Oh, wow.
So there's some links there, but I dropped out of that before I'd completed my course to become a magician. But then I also did distance learning and took some courses in psychology. Now I have gone back and started with the Open University doing a degree in psychology, and I've now got a scholarship to do a master's. So I've been, there you go. You didn't know that, did you? But it takes time. That's the problem. But I've read a heck of a lot of psychology, and all of the psychology I'm interested in is about communication and perception and what it is that makes us engage with people, what it is, you know. So I've certainly studied these subjects, but I think, you say that I knew that that was important as a 16-year-old. I didn't know that was important. I thought that's what magic was. Mm. You see what I mean? Because I didn't know there were all these tricks and secrets out there, really. Yeah. So I thought that magic was performance. I didn't occur to me that I should be learning I saw a trick that was good. I wouldn't think I want to know the secret of that. I would think, unless I was inspired by the performance, you know, and I thought that I could do it. If I didn't think it would fit into my act, then I wasn't interested in learning the secret to the trick. Mm. And that's the way I saw the whole of this the field. So I thought that that's what I was trying to do. So yes, I wasn't taught, but that was the way I was trying to learn.
That makes sense. Yeah. And let me do another question on that, because obviously I know how important branding is to you. You were talking about when you were 16, you were doing family shows, you were doing close-up magic, and then you went to college, and then you became a professional magician. One question I get on my channel often a lot is, hey, I do family shows, I do kid shows. I want to transition to another market. I know that I can do more than that, but I'm scared about leaving that income behind because that's a big part of my income in order to take a blind leap more than anything else into a different area. It sounds like that you did that. It sounds like a lot of your income at one point was coming from family shows. And at some point, because obviously now we know you as somebody who does very high profile gigs on stages all around the world, that you have transitioned very, very successfully into that higher end corporate market. What made you kind of, was it when you decided to go full-time professional, or was it beforehand? How did you make that transition?
It's a very good question. For myself, I was forced into a position where I had to make a decision. I had been doing loads of kids shows and trying to do the close-up magic as well. And the thing about kids shows is if you get good at it and you've got a niche in an area, the bookings come in, as I'm sure you know. And then it is hard to leave that behind because that's your income, isn't it? So I was doing that in the Oxford area, and now we're talking way back. This was when I was at college, basically, or just finishing, or just when I was dropping out there. So year 2000, I was doing, I had as many kids shows as I wanted to do. And I've been working on the close-up magic, and I had a separate brand for the close-up magic already. And I think a lot of people do that. You have a separate website. But I knew that I was moving that direction. I deliberately started changing my kids shows so that I knew that I could. So I wanted to put magic in the kids shows that I was going to use in my shows for adults, right? So I started trying to, even though it wasn't necessarily what, you know, the obvious choice for a kids show, you can get away with doing something quite different, but I wanted to have quality magic in there, which I could then use later. So that was a useful move. And I would argue that my stage magic, my ability on stage came from the kids shows rather than from the close-up. So the close-up magic was very useful, but when I started to do stage performance, it was much more what I learned doing kids shows. So I think there is a link there. But in answer to your question, I got cancer and I had to have chemotherapy, and that knocked my kids market dead for a few months, as in I just had to drop everything. And during that time, you sort of feel like, what have I been doing? I've been so busy working nonstop. What do I want to do in my life? So that's the true story of that. Talked to my wife and we said, right, I didn't completely drop the kids shows, but after that, I stopped pushing them. I would do kids shows, but I had changed what I was. So I would then say to people, when I was doing kids shows, I'd say, well, actually I'm this kind of magician. I do this kind of shows, right? Mm-hmm. So I changed my brand. And to be even more honest than that, I did change my brand. But what I did first was I said, right, I'm going to clear my debt. So I went mental on saving money and cleared my debt. and then really took the swing into corporate entertainment. But I also at that point then moved to Norway.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so, was that a business decision because you thought that there was, or was that a personal decision?
No, the thing is, then I was just saying, right, I'm shutting down the kids show entertainment. I'm going to go for the corporate. And if I don't make it, then I don't make it, you know, and then I'll work out what I'm going to do after that. Right. And then my wife's from Norway and my kid was just getting to the age where he's going to start school. And it was like, do you know what? Let's go to Norway as well at the same, you know, this is our opportunity to, now we're sort of starting afresh a little bit. So we'll go to Norway and we'll start there. So it coincided with that as well. So I paid off my debts. I went to Norway and that helped me bridge that gap. But when I went to Norway as well, then I said, right, I'm not going to do, it was really hard, right, to be honest, to get into the market in Norway. So it was no one wanted to hear from me. Close-up magic was also not a thing really in Norway at the time, right? So I saw an opportunity there. I thought, wow, close-up magic's huge in the UK. I could do close-up magic in Norway. So I saw an opportunity in the market. But the problem with when a market doesn't exist is how the hell do you get it started? Do you know what I mean? So I just kept banging on doors. I mean, there was an events company, was the biggest events company in Norway, did the biggest jobs. And I tried to get in at the top. So I was banging on there. I was ringing them again and again saying, can I just come in and show you what I do? And they just weren't interested, you know? And then in the end, I managed to ring this guy, and he was in a toilet in New York or something. And he said, look, I'm in a toilet in New York, but if you really want to come, you can come next Monday to our offices. We'll give you 5 minutes and that's it. You don't get more than 5 minutes. So you have to be finished in 5 minutes. You don't have more time than that, but okay. You know, so I borrowed my mother-in-law's car because I didn't have anything at the time. And I drove into Oslo, crashed the car on the way, but luckily I'd left so early that I had time to sort that out and then drive on. Turned up at their offices and did a performance, a pitch for them of close-up magic initially. And that got my foot in the door for corporate events. But here's the thing, that's where I was bitterly disappointed with the corporate events world, because as a close-up magician in a corporate event, your value, I mean, at that point, I think they, I mean, I thought it was a lot of money at the time, but they were paying me around 700 quid a night to do close-up, right? Now, for me, that was enough to jump from kids shows. We're looking back a few years, right, as well. So kids yeah. shows then was what, 200 quid max? And then, you know, that I thought, this is great. You know, I can live off this, even if I don't get that many jobs, and I can try to build from here. But I was disappointed because I was doing close-up at a corporate gig, and this is the big money gig, right? You've got the TV stars on stage, you've got a massive event, and the organizers are like, okay, now go out to the tables. And 5 minutes later, they're like, okay, come out again, because we've got something else on stage, you know? And they didn't really care about what I was delivering. I wasn't having an impact on that event. I was a little bit of salt on the top of the, you know, a little bit of pepper or whatever on top of the food, you know, that didn't matter either way. I realized afterwards that some of the events, they hadn't even told the client that I was going to be there. You know, they just sort of squeezed that out of the budget as well. We put in it, that it doesn't matter, you know? And then I was looking at what people were doing on stage, and I was like, that's where I want to be. You know, that's where I want to have an impact. I could have a massive impact on these events, and could I host the event? And that was what I was thinking from that day one. So that's what I started trying to be. And that's prompted my sort of transition from close up to the stage. And I've sort of established myself in that market in the years that followed. And now I'm, you know, in Norway, I work outside of Norway's borders as well. But within Norway, if you ask people in the business about the events industry, they'll know me and two others as being the people who sort of have mastered the events industry. And now I'm saying that myself. But I don't... And it is to brag, I suppose. But I'm really proud of what I've achieved, obviously. And that is an important background to the Pro Magic Academy, because that's where Paul Martin, you know, where he's known me from. And that's what we're trying to share with the Pro Magic Academy is the way to make that transition and the way to make money at corporate events and what the corporate events market is looking for. Because as soon as I came into Norway, I was not looking at any other magicians. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't really in the UK either. When I was first making money with the family shows, I was skint, you know. It was all about making money at the next gig, you know. And I was focusing on what can I deliver at a party that's going to make money, you know. So I didn't have time to engage with the magic community. And when I came to Norway, it wasn't about magic. It was about in this market here, how do I fit in? What can I deliver? What are people going to want? And how can I make my magic really be an experience for the people who are watching it? So even when I was doing close-up magic, my website, I call myself the professional guest, right? So the idea was that I would be the most fascinating guest you could invite to a party, right? Rather than saying I'm a close-up magic, I'll run down and do magic tricks all over the place. So I wanted to build this character of an Englishman in Norway. And I built my persona around that. I went a bit up, you know, a bit Oxford. You know, really, I'm from Didcot. We don't speak posh English there, but I put it on a little bit, you know, and I felt good in that role. And I built my confidence there. And because I marketed myself as a professional guest, I got a gig in 2010, which was one of the first years in Norway. I've done about a year with this one events company where they give me quite a lot of close-up magic and a few things on stage. And then there's a guy who arranges the big, he was actually a judge on, he's the judge on Idol and Norway's Got Talent and that sort of thing in Norway. He arranges these big parties, and he was arranging a wedding for one of the most famous guys in Norway, which is in Marrakesh, full of celebrities, a totally overdone wedding, but really a big media thing, you know. It's like the sort of Posh and Beck's wedding of Norway, if you like. He got me to go there, and basically he just said, well, we want this to be the most fascinating event ever, and we want the most fascinating guests to be there, so we want you to be there. So he flew me out to Marrakesh, and that really boosted my career in Norway, because it meant I met a lot of the most influential people all at one event a weekend in Marrakesh. But there you go, there's a whole load of stories there, mate.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, again, going back to, I get a lot of questions on this channel, and one thing I get is, hey, just like I said, people want to transition from family to close up. There's so many close up magicians that I transition to, that I speak to, that want to transition into performing on stage. And they don't know how to do it because it's a very different skill set. You know, standing up in front of hundreds of people and commanding a room is a very different thing to walking up to three or four people at an event and interrupting yourself in there. And a lot, and the magic's different, the way you carry yourself, the way you market yourself, the branding, everything is, it's almost like switching industries, but it's something, yes, that every close-up magician strives for, and a lot of people struggle. They try and do it and they fail, and I know that is a big part of the Pro Magic Academy. So yes, you know, is there any advice that you can give for anybody that's watching this that wants to make that transition, other than subscribing to the Pro Magic Academy, which they should all do, obviously?
Yeah, obviously, yeah, that's the obvious choice. Yeah, and that's really good, because there I've done this. I have experience without the help of cancer or moving countries, if you could call that help, because that was a transition that is a real challenge, both in terms of the marketing and the business side, and in terms of the skill set. And I think that, and you have to do both. That's the thing. So when we work on these courses at the Pro Magic Academy, and then we're really trying to help people do it, and we have helped people do it, and we're incredibly proud of that. That it changes people's lives, making that transition. I don't think, you know, there's a lot of, you can get quite comfortable doing close-up magic, perhaps, and it's quite difficult to think, oh, am I going to leave that? You know, I'm a star close-up magician, but I feel, and Paul feels, and we've experienced that, for us at least, and for many of the people who have done our courses, making the transition to the stage, it's such a release in a way. You get to perform, you know, you get to feel like a star and really deliver what you're doing in a way that has a massive impact in an event. That's incredibly satisfying. You get, of course, much higher fees, basically for less work, although I would argue that that's not necessarily, you know, every now and then I certainly get a close-up gig, still, you know, every now and then I have to pay the same, I'm afraid, but every now and then I get a close-up gig, and it is quite relaxing because you don't have to turn up with what's in your pockets and you wander around and chat to people, and it's great. I don't mean to disrespect close-up magicians, because that's an art as well, but being on stage is not necessarily easy, right?
Yeah, no, it's much harder to be on stage than it is to be a close-up magician, 100%.
Well, it's different. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, right, so let's say, well, there's the performance side and there's the business side, right? In terms of the business side, you need to be, if you're going to perform on stage, especially in the corporate market, but and that is where the stage market is, unless you're going to theatre, that's a different ballgame altogether. I do that as well, but that's another story. On the corporate side, stage performance, in terms of marketing, you then have to be a stage magician, yes, right? You can't be a close-up magician who can go on stage as well. It works the other way around. That's my advice, right? So if you're going to market yourself, then you market yourself as being a magician, right? And you push the stage shows, and then you have one little bit of your website that says, I also do close-up magic. Meeting someone who's on the stage, as in principle, who is a stage magician, and then meeting them and they do close-up magic for you is such a special thing for someone who's the layperson. They're like, wow, he's not only on the stage doing a brilliant show, everyone thinks he's great, but the most amazing thing, and that's unfortunately that's what people will say, or fortunately, was that he came and met me and he showed me something personally, right? So you want to create that experience, and it's creating the experience, which is your product. So what experience am I going to create with the people? And that's the way I've worked it. And there are various different ways of going about that as a magician, but I feel that marketing wise, know what you are, and then there's what you are, who you are as a character. Now I'm going to go roll back to my childhood here now, right? Which is I want to be a magician. So what are you? And then what are people going to experience? So I am a stage performer, and people are going to also meet me up close and see that I really do magic everywhere I go. You know, it's amazing. So that side is that's one little hint for the marketing, or for your profile and your brand, so to speak. In terms of the performance of stage magic, and this has fascinated me right from the moment I started making that transition in Norway, and I've really looked into it and studied it, and this is what I teach other people in the speaker industry and in the entertainment industry in Norway when I'm coaching people as well. Because going on stage at a corporate event is somewhere in between theater and public speaking. It's probably other things you could, and stand-up comedy as well, depending a bit on your style. It's not pure theater. And I think because of the success of someone like Darren Brown, his brilliant theatre shows, it can be easy to think, when I'm going to start doing a stage show, so I'm going to try to do something theatrical, right? Then the music will play and it'll go silent and I'll walk on and I'll do this. And then, you know, and you're at a corporate event. It's not like that. A corporate event is a battle, you know? So a lot of magicians, they try, right? You're a close-up magician, you get a gig on stage. Now, you're excited. This is your chance, right? And I've been there myself. And then you jump up and then you go one of two routes. Either you try to do something you've never done before, right? You create an act for this stage show and it's theatrical and you've got a fantastic idea in your head. And then you walk out and no one gives a shit from the audience, you know, nobody really watches it, or it just doesn't work, or it's too complicated to stage. I mean, early on, one of the first gigs I got on stage in Norway, I did an appearing, making the boss appear trick, turned up and the staging was just impossible. I couldn't do the trick. I tried to, which was stupid. I looked stupid. I gave the money back to the person who booked me and apologized. And, you know, and that was the end of my run with that massive events company that I talked about for a while until I managed to get back in their good books. So I've been there as well. All right. but that's the thing. You try it and it's not what you think. That's one mistake you can make, right? Going too theatrical. The other thing, which I think probably most people do because they're not that ambitious and they haven't put that much work into making the theatrical bit, they turn up and they think, oh, great. Well, I do close-up magic. I'll get hold of a couple of tricks that are bigger and I'll present them. Because in close-up magic, they haven't really put the effort into the presentation. They've often, you perform it 20, 30 times a night, maybe the same trick. Yeah. So during the course of an evening, you got pretty good at it. Right? And you go on stage, you get to do that once per event, and you hardly get any events either. So how are you going to perfect that trick, right, in front of a real audience? You can't do it the way you did it with your close-up magic, which was, oh, I'll try it out about amongst a load of other tricks, and by the end of the night, I'll have found a few good lines, right? So your close-up magic grows itself into routines. Stage magic, it's got this terribly difficult thing where you've got to make the routine. So that's one element. So you go up on stage, people go up on stage and then they're just going to perform a set of tricks, but they don't actually have an act. And that's one of the things we talk about. Actually, we've got a new course. I don't know if I should say this on here because it's not been released yet, but we've almost put it together. We're making a low cost course, which is about, or we want to sell it cheap, at least at first, just to give people that concept of what it means to create a corporate act and how to do that. Because you know, at first we focused a lot on in the Pro Magic Academy on selling the concept of being an MC, which is an incredibly useful way to get your act on stage. It's a way to make good money. It really is a career changing thing, move to make to get into being an MC. As a magician, it's also the magic magician and MC combo is also a killer combo that the market's crying out for. So that there's a massive secret right there. But that's what big courses at the MC at the Pro Magic Academy is about. But in order to be an MC, you need to have an act, right? And in our MC course, we do cover this, but we're also making a little course, which is just to help give people a good idea of what it means to create a corporate act. One, because your corporate act, right, is like a 15 minute, probably, act, which defines who you are as an artist. It's unique, it's you, right? And you're going to do that exact same act at every opportunity you can to get it brilliant. So if you're transitioning from close up to stage, right, here's a massive bit of strategy that I'm giving away for free. Paul's going to kill me. But the first thing you start doing, you start saying to your close up clients, tell you what, I can throw in a stage performance at the end of the close up for free, right? You do that a little bit, you get some experience. Now, that stage performance, you're not going to do a half hour or 45 minutes, forget it. You're going to go for 7-8 minutes, one strong routine that you feel is you, and you're going to do that and start mastering it, right? And then you're going to grow that, and then you're going to sell that as a massive upsell. And then you're going to move on to being the stage act and throwing in the close-up, right? So there's a transition model, for example, for you.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of thing we're working on the Pro Magic Academy to help people to find that way to make the transition without having to throw away. And the transition from close up to stage is big because the performance style is very different, and all the things we've been talking about, but it is possible to keep your profile. Whereas kids shows to corporate is a much more difficult. You really are starting again in terms of your business as a rule. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So there you go. There's a bit of gold right there for you. And another thing, because you mentioned the difference in performance, and I've mentioned a few things now, but in this corporate act that you want to develop, in a stage act, the thing is, when you walk on a stage, or a bit of the psychology of all this, right? When we meet people in our normal interactions, right, we are constantly picking up information from the people we meet, right, in order to define how we're going to behave ourselves. So we greet someone, they greet us back. Already there's a dynamic there, and this is happening subconsciously. We're adjusting our behavior to suit the person we meet, right? Makes sense.
Yeah.
And that is a comfort net for us, and it's guidance for us, and it helps to define the way that interaction is going to go. And in close-up magic, that's the same. We're going up to a group, we're getting a vibe back. If we're good at it, then there's this interaction there, right? And therefore, we can just exist in a way. We're comfortable with that way of communicating. But you walk on a stage, it's something you don't get in any other part of your life. You can't walk on a stage and expect to have this interaction. The audience just sits and looks at you, right? Yeah. If you've got a good audience. So the audience is sitting and looking at you, and they're not giving you anything. So you need to know exactly who you are, what you're doing, how this interaction is going to go, and go onto the stage and lead the audience through that dynamic, right? You can't then, and you can see this when someone's inexperienced goes on stage, they walk on stage, they say, "Hi guys, how are we doing?" Right? You don't, if you're a good performer, you don't do that. You walk out there and you tell people how they're doing, right, basically. Because you're giving away, if you walk out and say that you're giving away that opening line, and you don't know what people are going to say. Someone might shout, you know, "It's terrible," you know, or whatever. You don't know what you're going to get from the audience. But it's also a sign of insecurity. And also people, you know, walk and say to you saying, "This is going to be amazing," or at least I think it is, you know, because you're not getting that feedback, and you sort of lose your nerve and you fill in the silences because you don't know what that silence is doing because you haven't defined it yourself. So when the silence occurs, you fill it in with ums and ahs and so on. But as a stage performer, you should be, right? You know exactly who you are. You know what vibe you're going to create. You know what your opening is going to be. If you're going to, if I don't care if parts of your routine aren't scripted, but that opening has got to be scripted. This is something Paul taught me early on, actually, and it really has made a difference to my career. You walk on that stage and you own it. You know, I deliver my lines, and if nobody laughs, I don't care. I pause as though they're laughing. I look at them and they start to smile, and then I move on to the next. Doing it exactly the way I do it, because this is my show. I'm going to own this room. I'm going to decide where we're going, and I know who I am. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. 100%. Yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting dynamics in walking on a stage, and I think magicians is something we need to learn, and the art of performing on a corporate stage, again, different from theatre. It's not, you know, it's a battle as well, isn't it? You walk on there, there's waiters in the room, people are talking, they've got it's no problem socially speaking, or it's acceptable them to be on their phones. You know,
yeah, well, and a lot of times in a corporate event, you know, a lot of time it might be a meeting that they've been to, or a big like convention they've spent all day in, you know, death by PowerPoint or whatever it is, and then you've got to come on, and you know, it's a totally different thing. They're not there, they haven't bought a ticket to watch a show, or like at a wedding, they're not there to like have a great time, they're there for business, and you've got to try and change the dynamic.
Yeah, that's right. And that is great. And again, though, is you that's going to decide how that dynamic's going to be. And there's different ways of looking at it. You know, you go into an event and you know that they've had a completely dry day. Everybody's sitting there. They don't even want to drink. They just want to go back to their hotel rooms if it's just a conference. Some, you know, it can be like that. But see, that's you can think to yourself, oh, great, this is going to be a nightmare. Or you can think to yourself, I get the chance to save the day.
Yes.
When I walk on, I'm going to be a breath of fresh air for these guys. They've had a nightmare all day. I'm going to walk on and they're going to be like, all right, ha, now I can relax. Yeah. And you're giving something to them. And that's another dynamic in performance, which I think people is underestimated. When you walk on stage or when you perform, you're giving to your audience. And I'm passionate about that. Whether you're a speaker or an entertainer or whatever you're doing, it's all about understanding, what am I going to give to the audience? Because and that might sound obvious, but all too many magicians walk on thinking, I'm going to be a star, right?
Yeah.
I think if I come across as being a star, that's going to be great for my business. You're wrong. If you what you've got to do is come across as being someone who gave people in the audience a lift, someone who made the night great, you know. And there's a very interesting dynamic there. I'm getting bogged down in things I love talking about, but I think I'm going to call it the Viggo Venn effect, right? You're familiar with Viggo Venn?
I mean, he's a guy that absolutely killed it this year. You know what I mean? He split opinions on social media, but you can't deny how many people voted for him. I thought he was incredibly entertaining, to be honest. I loved it.
Yeah, I think there's a really interesting dynamic there, right? And it is so true of the corporate event scene, right? Which is, in the moment, if you can deliver what people want in that moment, right, then you win on the night. So, and that's an example of where you could have, you know, I could go on with my act, or you know, or Paul could go on with his act, and at an event where they've got some huge star, and we totally win the day, even though the huge star is obviously, you know, you could say more talented. Right. But there's also a backside of that as well, which is that it's controversial afterwards, or people, if you don't have an element of class about you, or an element of what it is you're really good at, right? Or something that is worth money, then people afterwards be like, it's not good for your career as a whole. That makes sense. So there's kind of a balance. You've got to have the Viggo Venn factor in terms of, you've got to create something which is just like, wow, this is great. You've delivered exactly what we need at this event right now, right? And you've engaged the audience in this moment. You know, it's about presence and so on. But at the same time, you want to have a profile and a brand and something about your performance which also says to people, but he wasn't just fun, he was quality. And that's where Viggo Venn remains to be seen, but has he got that? Do you see what I mean? And that's where the controversy comes in. I think if you're someone who just, you know, I mean, I was interested, you said you loved it, and I think there's a tendency, as we're a performance as well, to think, well, actually, I'm better than that. And yes, we are, but we've got to learn from it as well. You know, we've got to look at it and say, yeah, but he did something that was brilliant, you know? Yeah. So I think in my career, I really sort of, I have to keep my brand going. And I remember I did one performance with another artist who seemed to just take the whole event, you know? And that one, I was the more expensive artist. I was the one that was the class act, if you like. I was hosting, and I brought this other artist on, and he just did some absolute crap, and everyone went crazy and loved it. And I remember afterwards thinking, what am I doing, you know? And then I met the client a year later, and I said, oh, that guy, he was just brilliant, wasn't he? Talking about this other artist. Because I remembered how much they loved him. And they were like, well, yeah, it was fun, but we've often talked about getting you back.
Wow.
And that's something to also remember. So another little hint, it's about this balance, right? But you have to acknowledge both. I know Paul did an event for me a while back in Norway, hosted an event for some super rich people who own a whole load of companies, and they were having an anniversary of the group. And so it's the family owned group. So the family was sort of all there, and it was all super high profile. And he was the host. And he said to me afterwards, he said, you know, I didn't get to do my best magic. But he said, they're going to be totally happy. Anyway, I spoke to them a bit later, and they were so happy with what Paul had done. They were absolutely over the moon. And she said to me, it wasn't about the tricks. It was about the fact that he was so professional. He delivered a quality service. We had things we had to change. We had to change, do loads of change. And he just adjusted it all. He led it perfectly. It's a perfect fit for the event. They were just totally, totally blown away by it, right? And that is another way, right, that we can deliver quality. Because you can do it in the act. You can do it by the fact that people are like, well, actually, he's a brilliant magician as well as being delivering that great fun thing or whatever it was. Yeah. But you can also do it in your professionalism, especially as a host, where people are like, well, not only did he lead the event really well, but he had a quality which we would pay double for because he made that event a success.
Yeah.
So there's these two elements. There's the element of fun, and there's the element of quality and being worth money. And these are elements you want to have in your brand, and you want to focus on delivering when you get to into the corporate event scene, because it is all about delivering what the client wants. There you go. I've been talking a lot again.
No, I'm finding this whole thing fascinating. And one thing that's come across is, and we haven't mentioned the word yet, but mindset. I mean, you seem to have such a positive mindset towards this. Like, a couple of times I've noted, like when you talked about going to Norway, and it was like, nobody's doing close-up magic, and you were going over as a close-up magician. You were like, that's amazing. I can really make a difference if I can get in with this. And then later on, you were talking about, hey, going into a corporate audience and everybody's tired. That's amazing, because that means that I'm going to be able to change things around. It's having that mindset that is so important. I mean, it looks like you have that in spades and then some. Is that, and I've met a lot of magicians that don't, you know, they turn up to the gig and they go, right, I'm going to die on my ass on this one. It's like, how important is having that mindset, both within business and performing and also, you know, magic?
It is really important. And I am, you know, I've booked a lot of magicians, you know, to come to join me at events or to do events I can't do or different things. I've booked a lot of different magicians and many have been great. And there was something special about, or Paul Martin is the one that sort of really became part of my business in Norway. And the reason for that was also that same mindset reason. It's possible to go to an event and say, is it a good event or a bad event? Is it a good audience or a bad audience? You know, I hired one magician. He said, well, I found a couple of tables that liked me when I was doing close-up magic, so I'm going back to them, you know? And I was like, well, there's 16 tables here. Do you know what I mean? We've got to get around the tables. But he said, yeah, but not everyone really is up for it, you know? Or, you know, this kind of, and then it's like, well, look, I don't want you to come again. Do you know what I mean? Because you're not there to judge whether the audience is right for you. You're there to give something to the audience, and wherever they are, you've got to give them a great night. You know, that's your job. That's what you're being paid to do. And Paul Martin's, he has also got this understanding that he's, you know, no matter what the gig is, once he's there, he will do anything to make that gig a success. And I mean, the first gigs I gave him were a tour around Norway with a builder's merchant, and he ended up standing on the back of a truck, you know, entertaining these builders who didn't understand a word of English in sub-zero temperatures. You know, we're talking Norway here. I was like minus 17 at one of his events, and he's like wearing a jacket under, you know, like a fleece jacket under his jacket, and like, and his hands are too cold to do card tricks. But he did it all without complaining, just got on with it. And I think that says a lot about, you know, why he's been a real commercial success as well. Apart from his being very good at routining and so on. So what, you know, that was one of the things that got me to use him. But I do think that's, you know, for me, it comes from my background, right? Because I grew up very socially difficult. Many magicians have backgrounds where they come from socially, what should we say? We've struggled socially or whatever, and we got into magic kind of through our own personal traumas. And I think for me, because I had a background where I did struggle, so I was, as I mentioned earlier, I lived in a very separate sort of world from the rest of people. I'm desperate to connect with people, really, which is another sort of background to where I came from. But I think also I didn't expect people to connect with me. It didn't occur to me that there were some people you naturally connected with and others you didn't. I didn't feel I connected with anybody, because at school I didn't have that same background of people. I was an outsider. And I think that had an impact on me, that when I became a magician, it didn't occur to me that, oh, do I naturally have chemistry with those people or not? That wasn't the question. It was, how do I engage with those people? Mm. Do you see what I mean? So how do I engage with an audience? That is the question. That is our job. That's what we should be trying to be an expert in. And that's what I've followed in terms of my interest in psychology, my interest in performing, and everything is about how do I engage with all the different types of people, different types of audience, different individuals that I might meet. So that gives you a different mindset. Mm. You know what I mean? You're thinking, what can I give? I mean, for me, that realization that I'm giving in my corporate job was just complete career changer. In one way, you put yourself down, right? You put yourself down to the level of somebody who's a servant, if you like, who's going to help other people have a good time. And initially, as you come magician, you think, I'm going to be the big star, right? That's what you're sort of looking for in one way, career-wise. But I really recommend, make your mindset, can I help? You know, can I give something to an event? And then you're always going to find something, you know, a positive way to look at it. And it, the thing is, it won't just be positive for me, it'll be positive for your client, and then your client will want to pay for it. I mean, yeah. Then we're into business straight away, you know, because that's what business is about. No one wants to pay for you to be a star. Nobody ever paid for someone else to be a star. They pay for a good feeling of something you deliver to them, right? So in terms of the business, that's where it's at, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
Great. That's really great advice. This is fantastic. Anybody who's listening to this, this is an absolute masterclass. It really is. And I'm so glad I've chatted to you, John. Let me ask you one more question. You mentioned right at the very beginning of the interview that obviously you love magic, but the thing that you really love is performing, and you've referenced being involved in theatre. I know that you're a speaker as well. You get hired as a speaker with nothing to do with magic. You've spoken about TEDx. I know that you do speaker training as well, and you work with various different people. How important is magic for you? And what I mean by that is, obviously, you perform all these big high profile events. If you had an incredible contract come in that landed on your doorstep that is as a speaker, but would involve you spending 2 years just speaking with no magic, you'd have to like outsource that or hand it all over to Paul or other people. Would that be okay for you? Or I'm trying to work out how important magic is to you when you really have so many facets to what you do, and it seems that performing is the most important part of what you do, which is great, but I'm just trying to work out how important the magical aspect of that is.
Yeah, sorry, I just wasn't deliberate to go out of focus there. That's okay. Camera's playing up. Gosh, should I sort out my camera first, or are we gonna? Yep. Nope. I don't know. Can you put a cut in there?
Yeah, I'll cut. Don't worry. Hang on. We'll stop talking for 5 seconds, and then we can just take a cut out, and I'll be able to see where it is on the timeline. So 1 minute. Hang on.
There we go. So it's a very good question, and it's hard to give an answer. For me, it is all linked together. How important is magic for me? That's to say, I don't really watch a lot of magic, or I'm not checking the latest releases. So in one way, sort of magic as a thing isn't so important for me. But magic as a part of who I am is definitely going to stay, and I do love that. I love what magic does. I love what magic does to an audience. It's quite unique, it's quite special, you know. The moments you can create, you know, again, it's that side of magic. I can't help it. That's all I'm interested in, is that side of magic, is what happens in the audience, you know, what happens in the audience's mind. I do my theatre show in Oslo now, which has been running I started up in September. There was a brand new hotel that was built, and I was really lucky because it's so high profile. It was all built in 1930s style and got a lot of attention internationally, the new building, or the refurb project. And it's like the most expensive and most talked about venue. And I was really lucky that I got the chance to be the act that was on in a theater, which is down in the basement of this venue. Really, so it's a really high profile opportunity, even though it's, I don't make it, even when it sells out, would make more events at a corporate event, right? So it's not like a great business move. But I started doing this theater show really from artistic grounds. So I don't know if that answers your question a little bit, but that show was because I wanted to do something with my magic that was also more than just, a corporate event. I wanted to see where I could go with it. And I did a theatre show with Paul a while back as well, called The Miracle Men, which was more or less a showcase, actually, of our corporate work, plus a real Derren Brown-esque finale, which we're incredibly proud of. But that really boosted us in the market as well. So, but that was one thing. But this show here is more of a personal show. It's a 2-hour performance. It's called The Stranger, and it references my background and my upbringing, and it tells stories from the 1930s and in the first half with a range of magic and mentalism, and then in the second half it really goes down the mind reading route, and is about connecting with people, and is about those things that I'm passionate about, but it's told through magic. Do you see what I mean? Rather than the way we talked about it now. And it sells out. And we're going to continue the run with exactly the same show, some small improvements in the autumn, and just keep it going. So that's been great. But so magic really is, I mean, I think it's special. I do. I would love to be able to sing. Because I think singing makes magic as well, you know, in the audience's minds. But I don't think I'd switch singing for magic either. Magic is, I find it a little bit sad that magic is generally underrated. I think magic can be so much more. I feel that my niche in magic is very limited, and that I think that's a good thing. I think I've defined what magic is for me and my expression of magic and the way I use magic at events and so on, and the kind of abilities that I have. And I look at other artists and I just think, you could be this, you could be that, you know, you could be a magician who only ever does cards, but who does it in a way that really fascinates and engages people, or you could be a magician. Do you know what I mean? I think the idea that magicians can become something unique within our genre is incredibly fascinating and exciting. And I think with the Pro Magic Academy, we can help people to find these their things and to make magic more, you know. So I think that it's a funny thing, you know, we think performing for corporate is, oh, it's just money making, blah, blah, blah. It's not that for me, you know, it really isn't. If you can, the money is kind of a label that can tell you how much you've managed to achieve what you wanted to achieve in your performance. You know, if someone experiences me, right, my performance, my way of being, everything about the experience of meeting me, if that tells them that I'm a £10,000 magician, then they expect me to charge that, that's a measurement of how much I've affected them, you know, of the way I've come across. And I don't mean because I've told them that I'm great and I do this and I do that. I mean because I've given them an experience with my magic that they feel was absolute quality in class. So I think the art of giving that feeling to people is what corporate magic is also about. And I think, yeah, anyway, I think so I do love magic, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah, I can tell. But you mentioned money, and I want to ask you one more question, which is, I can tell you're not money motivated either, but I can tell that, you know, how you're perceived by your clients and so on and so forth is important, and that's rightfully so. Within the magic industry, a lot of the time, the pros, especially that compete in a small market, they look at each other as competition. Whilst my background is I spent a lot of time networking in business, and I was always taught about collaboration, not competition. Now, as somebody, I suppose the question I'm trying to ask here is, it's very unusual within the magic community to do what you're doing and you and Paul are doing with the Pro Magic Academy, which is literally opening up the book and giving away all the secrets to enable people to very quickly compete on the same level as you. Those secrets are normally guarded, and I know you're paying for it, but let's be honest, you're not shy of a bob or two. You don't need that money. It's not like you're depending on the income from the Pro Magic Academy to go and pay keep the lights on in your house this week. You are making very good money. You don't need to give those secrets away. If you didn't, you would be as successful, but you're choosing to put, you and Paul are choosing to put time and effort, and I know how much effort has gone into the Pro Magic Academy, probably nowhere near as much, you know, you're not, however much you're making, it's not worth the time and effort you've put into it. So why, I suppose, when you don't need to do this and you're in an industry where this sort of thing isn't generally done, are you saying, hey, here's my playbook, take it and you can be where I am?
Yeah. That's a question I ask myself every day. Why the hell did I do this? No, it is a good question, and part of it is that, start from the beginning, Paul started this up and invited me to be part of it, and he wanted my different angle on it. He wanted the things I've been talking with you about today. My thoughts on the business, my understanding of the business and the market and the dynamics of performance, everything. He wanted that to be part of the Pro Magic Academy and persuaded me to be part of it. So, you know, I'm here because I'm in the Pro Magic Academy because Paul's persuaded me to do so, and I'm grateful for that. However, you've got very good points there, and it is something I've certainly had to think about. It's something that I thought I would like to do one day, you know, and you think, well, maybe... You know, normally, let's face it, normally you'd wait till your career's, you know, you're getting older and you're not in the middle, you know, it's not still growing your business, and you think, okay, now I'm winding down, how am I going to, what's my retirement plan, you know? But, you know, that would be the normal thing to do. And, you know, talk to Paul about this. And he's like, but nobody has ever really done this while they're actually doing it, if you know what I mean. Yeah. We want to, if I wait till my career is going downhill, right, and then I start telling you what I did 10 years ago, then I'm not totally up to date. So in terms of really delivering something which has never been done before, which is to really share with people, you know, how you're going to succeed right now in today's market, and being taught by someone who's actually out there doing it, really doing it at a high level, it just doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen because of what you say, because, you know, I'm busy making money with other things. But that was one thing, the fact that we thought we need it, you know, or there's a need for that in the market. And it would be special to do that. And also, we have been annoyed by the knives out approach in magic, you know, and by the competition. And like you say, you know, engaging with the corporate world. And in Norway, I've been so blessed myself by the people around me in the business lifting me up, helping me along, you know. I'm not talking about magicians, I'm talking about comedians, event organizers, everything. They talk well of each other. And I've learned from other people in the business to do the same, to talk people up. And it always, you know, karma, whatever you like. That's just the pure psychology of talking well of people makes people think well of you, right? So that's something to bear in mind if your strategy in business is to go and slag off the last magician who had the job that you did, right? Yeah, just don't. There's no point, right? So the whole sort of general vibe of positivity, which I've learned to have in my business, and which Paul and I have often talked about and decided that we want to have in our approach to magic. And you are there, and you quite often are like, do you know what? We're going to lose money on this. And then you say, yeah, but that is our value. You know, that is what we decided to do, that we are going to share and be open, and we want everyone to succeed. And you just keep saying that to yourself, to be honest, because sometimes you don't like it, you know. But obviously, there was a catalyst again, and that was COVID. You know, the catalyst was COVID, that Paul had time and thought, what should I use my time doing? And he set up the first of the courses, which I hope we can talk about another time with Paul, but the Wedding MC course, which really... he really gave away a business there, which in a market, which as soon as people started buying into it, they were making money, you know. And you get people after like 8 weeks on the course ringing up and saying, do you know what, Paul, you know, you've just, you know, this has changed my life. You know, I've just got 17 grand's worth of bookings in, you know, and Paul would ring me up and he'd say, he said, John, this is amazing, you know, and not it's amazing I've made money, but it's amazing I've made this guy money. Because we're human, we have that in us to enjoy other people's success and enjoy being part of it and enjoy helping people. We do have that in us as people, and I think we should make more of that and enjoy that. And that is incredibly rewarding. So that we get a lot out of it just from that point of view. If we succeed, we get a lot out of it ourselves, you know. We certainly do, in terms of that satisfaction of helping somebody succeed. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of people as well that will buy a course and never even look at the videos. And then we do what we can. We do live sessions or whatever to try to help trigger people. But, you know, that's up to them. And obviously, you know, so there are all types.
you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, right? You know, if you're going to spend the money on being in the Pro Magic Academy, the one thing that you can't teach is ambition, desire, determination, resilience, whatever, you know, actually going out and taking that information and putting it into practice, because that's the one thing that stop people from being successful. If they look at it and they go,
I mean, we do what we can. There are videos at the start of our courses talking about mindset, about motivation, trying to encourage people to go for it, you know. So we do what we can, and you know, our experience is that a lot of people do and that they get the rewards, and that's great, you know. It really is. That's what we want. But yeah, I mean, we have kind of taken the decision that we're sharing, and then we do share pretty much everything. I mean, we're trying now to avoid sharing our own routines, and that is not because we are trying to hold stuff back. It's because there's no point. People won't become good magicians by just copying word for word our acts. So there are routines which Paul's shared on some of the courses from his act, and which people use, and it can be a good learning move for them. But we're constantly then encouraging them, how can you find the way to create this effect, this effect in the audience with your magic and your routines? So So the Pro Magic Academy at the moment, we do have some routines that we sell, and they're winners. You know, they're something that will work all the time. But our ethos is to help people really become, you know, is that ambition, Nivo? Is it a level of ambition as a magician, right? What do you want to be? Are you happy to be the guy who does exactly the same routines as every other magician out there? Fine, you know, then do that. But if you want to transition, it has to be a transition. You can't just jump. But if you want to transition into being you, you know, something totally unique and special that people talk about. They don't just talk about, we had a magician once and they don't care who he was. It has to be, we had John Ensor, you know, and meeting him was insane. You know, that's what we want, you know. And I think there's space for so many different artists in the world of magicians. Is not a case of, you know, and that's the only way to get your fees up as well. You know, your fees goes up because they people want you, not somebody else. Once they really want you, you can almost charge what you like. If they can afford it, they'll pay it because they want you, and then don't just go, oh well, is there another magician who's cheaper, you know?
But that brings us back to branding and creating that personal brand so that people buy into you, as opposed to the concept of I want a magician.
Yeah.
They want a magician, they want you, John Ensor. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So and that's an exciting thing. It's a creative thing. Mm. And it's something that takes time as well, you know, to really build your brand. So I mean, we do give people in a way a shortcut into the business in terms of they get so much knowledge and direction, which has taken us years of trial and error to work out. But on the other hand, it takes time as well. You know, you have to, the communication of who you are takes time and patience. And you have to take the thing is, to build a brand, you have to decide who you are, and then you have to be that, and you have to let it sink in over time in people's minds, right? But that means you have to get the brand right, right? Because if you build a brand, it takes time for it to sink in, and then you see the result of it. And if that result isn't work, then you could have done, wish you'd done a different brand. So the thing about the Pro Magic Academy is, for example, there's one example of a way that people get help is because we tell them, okay, if you really want to build your brand in that way, you can if you like, but it's not going to be an easy fit for events. So it's not going to make as much money as if you built your brand in this way, right? Because if you build your brand this way, straight away the corporate companies will think, I can use that. That'll fit in every kind of event. It will fit for tech companies. It will fit for builders, merchant events. It will fit for, you know, do you see what I mean? So that sort of guidance and that sort of knowledge is will help people to build their brand, to do the transitions. That's great. There's a fly here that I hope it's not too obvious on the screen. That's what people get away from this interview. If they watch this on YouTube, it'll be like, oh yeah, the interview with the fly. Yeah, that'll be great.
Well, I've got one last question for you, John. Which is somebody who's come across in this whole interview is very, very ambitious. What's next? And what I mean by that is, I'm not too sure how old you are, but you're not long in the tooth by any stretch of the imagination. You have achieved more than most magicians would dream that they could achieve at the end of their career. You know, we've talked about your accomplishments, and, you know, we haven't even mentioned the show that you mentioned in passing that you've performed multiple times, you know, to the royal family. All of my notes that I've got here, like the stuff that you've done that we haven't even covered is incredible. And then as everything that we have talked about and how successful you've been in business and how successful you are at training other people and now with what you're doing with the Pro Magic Academy, is there anything left on your bucket list that you want to achieve? Is there anything that you want to achieve within magic or within business that you haven't hit yet? Or are you kind of just in a state where you're like, yep, I've done well? You know, that 16-year-old kid that was going out doing kid shows that was, you know, having to pay off their debt a few years later. You've, you know, if that person looked at who you are now, I'm sure they'd go, yeah, that'll do. I'm happy.
It's a deep question, Craig. That's a big question. All the way through, I haven't, maybe it's just who I am. I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head when you said I'm ambitious, but I'm not a dreamer. I haven't really dreamed of where I want to be in 20 years at any point. Mm-hmm. I've known the direction I want to head in, and I've been strategic about going that direction. So I believe that I can get there. And I've always had this sort of I've been slightly distant from it as well. I'm like, well, even if I don't get there, this could be great, you know. And moving into being a speaker, I screwed up so many times. I spent years, I was like established in the events industry. Like, why can no one book me as a speaker, you know? And I tried doing talks and I fell on my face and I felt like an idiot. It's taken time, you know, to move into that business. I mean, at first it felt like it took a long time as well to move from close up to stage, from stage to hosting. These are all transitions that have taken time and there've been a lot of failings along the way. And perhaps now for the first time in my life, I don't need to focus on getting enough work in to pay the bills and that sort of thing. That gives me more creativity and gives me more chance to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. I am nervous about my own attitude and I need to be. I need to have that attitude that I'm only as good as my last gig. And now I'm talking like I am some sort of, you know, success. And I do see myself as successful, but I've seen myself as successful all the way through. If that makes sense, even when I successful kids entertainer, you know, so that doesn't really change. I keep doing the next thing and the next thing, but I've also had to focus on learning to think, to enjoy the moments, you know, learning to spend time with my family and enjoy and spend the money, for example, you know, that I've earned and learn to enjoy life as I go through it. And that's also a journey, and it's a case of maturity as well. And I've got, now I'm over 40, so but thanks for saying I seemed young. Over 40 can still be pretty young, mind. I don't have massive ambitions. I'll see where things take me. I'm going to keep doing magic. I really enjoy the Pro Magic Academy, and that is why I invest a disproportionate amount of time in those things. And again, the funny thing is, you see, everything you do adds to other things. So you can do stuff for people for free quite a lot. And if you know that it's building who I am and what I do and my profile and all these things, then it keeps building your, you know, it's important to have a profile that's more than just, you know, after a while in career, or at least it's the way I've seen it, is to be more than just I do tricks, you know, to be a profile that's more interesting, and to use the different skills, your background, wherever you come from, and be a complete person in as many ways as you can. So that sort of led now to, I'm very happy now to have so many different things that I'm doing. You know, yesterday I spent 3 hours coaching a guy there's a five-part documentary about a massive court case around this guy where he was which is incredibly complex, and the problem is that nobody likes him, and he then got you know, basically condemned for something which he's totally innocent of, and this documentary has revealed that, and it's going to be up for trial again. And in the build-up to that trial, he wants help, exactly like a magician, design it, help to be a person so that when people meet him, the experience of meeting him is right. Because the reason he was, everything went wrong in his whole of his journey with the police and the criminal system is that he is a guy who says the facts and doesn't care whether anyone likes him or not, right? So interesting projects like this come up where I get the chance to work with somebody and help them come across better, right? Which is, that's totally different from magic, but it's for me, it's exactly the same thing. In magic, we're working with perception, working with the perception of, first of all, of you as an artist. Well, what do people feel about you? What's the experience of me? Do they think, oh, all right, he's a guy from down the road who does some magic tricks? Or do they think, wow, this is a guy from a world of magicians that I know nothing about, who has got experiences, you know, and who's fascinating because he must have a whole world of experience he hasn't even shared with me, you know, but he's deep, you know, like an iceberg. There's more under the surface, you know. It's managing that feeling people get about people, which is interesting. So I'm working with this guy. I've worked with you know, I've been helping a royal family member writing their speeches. It's random stuff. But my business is magic, really, still, and events. But the fact that I get these projects, I just love that, what that gives to my life in terms of spice and interest, and the chance to help people. And I sometimes take them on when they're not paid, take them on when they're paid. And it's building my profile. So who knows? I'm not worried about what I'll be, you know, but I've got a feeling I'll be doing, I'll always be a magician in terms of who I am. Yeah. I think that. And I think even when I'm doing talks, you know, you say I do speaking about other things. I do speaking about communication, about how to speak, but it is linked to magic, you know, and I'll throw in a trick whenever I can. And my profile is that I'm a magician as well. And you know, with TEDx, I've been asked to do another TED talk, I'll do that at some point when I'm ready. But with TEDx, you get to meet people and work with them and learn how they're going to present themselves and tell their story or their message or their research, or whatever it is, and how it's going to engage with people. And it takes you into different worlds, you know, fascinating, strange worlds. I mean, I spent time talking to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you know, the Manchester United manager, because, you know, he didn't have much else to do. But, you know, in connection with TEDx, you know, it's just like fascinating to, and then you end up talking about, you know, how he engages with players and how he dealt with coming into Manchester United as somebody with no real status, you know. And how he used the club status to build his own, you know, his ability to be a leader, you know, fascinating things, which are all sort of in my mind, they're all linked, and they're linked to magic in a way. So I'll be doing things, but I think all of these other projects will remain on the side. And I think magic will be the core of what I do moving forward. So I hope, actually, Craig, I mean, I'm really grateful to have been on here. And be part of the Pro Magic Academy. And I hope to have lots of really interesting conversations with magicians in the future and to engage more with the magic community. I really do. I hope that'll be a part of my future, engaging more with the magic community, not being such a loner out there on the side doing my thing.
You've got so much that you can give to the community. You've got so much knowledge that you share so freely. I think that would be fantastic. I really do.
Thanks, Craig. That means a lot.
No, definitely. And this has been a fantastic interview. Now, we are doing another thing very, very shortly, which is going to involve yourself and Paul. And we're going to be kind of taking a deep dive into the Pro Magic Academy. But while people are waiting for that video, we've spoken about it quite a lot today. Where can people go and register their interest and sign up? And because you've got lots of different courses, it was originally just the wedding MC, but obviously it's expanded over time and it continues to expand.
Yeah, I mean, the Pro Magic Academy website, is it promagicacademy.co.uk? Let me just double check that one. I'm sure you can put a link up underneath your video, can't you, Craig?
Yes, I will. It'll be in
the description. Promagicacademy.co.uk is our website, there's a lot of information there. We have a few products as well, magic trick products that we... that we sell as well, but our main business, certainly for looking ahead, is around the courses, although we have a few other products coming out. But we'll probably keep the products quite low volume, and is the courses that is really our passion in the Pro Magic Academy. So that's the website, promagicacademy.co.uk. There's a group as well on Facebook, and a page you're welcome to follow. And keep in touch, and we will have new courses coming out. I mentioned one which we should be releasing. I think we're going to wait with releases until September now, or the second half of August. Let people enjoy their summer, and we'll see. And we're trying different ways to reach out to magicians. You know, adverts, posts on social media, and so on. But again, it's something that I believe will grow, and we're mostly focused on doing it right and getting results, and then over time. We want to to build a reputation for being really professional, giving great service, and really, really being out there to help people, you know, and making a difference in people's businesses. So
one question that I think people are going to have, although I'm based in the UK and a lot of people watch this from the UK, the people who watch this YouTube channel, only 25% are from the UK. My biggest audience is America and Canada and then Europe and so on and so forth. So there's going to be a lot of people watching this that are going to hear promagicacademy.co.uk and think, okay, that's not probably relevant to me. Content within the Pro Magic Academy, is it relevant to anybody regardless of where they're based geographically?
It is, absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm not in the UK and I've been working across Europe and more recently, I've been moving more into the US market as well, at doing conferences, particularly as a conference host and a little bit less magic, actually, on the work that I've been doing there. But it's typical when you first move into a new market, the job that brought you there is the one that people see and then they want the same, you know. I mean, the corporate events, once you get to a certain level, they are quite similar across the world. They really are, because they are international events, you know, so there is a lot of relevance. The wedding MC, interesting, you get people, I mean, there's a guy down in New Zealand, you know, who bought it and has had great results, you know, following exactly the sort of setup that we've got in the UK. And we're very keen to get different people in. The MC course, the MC Blueprint, which is more geared towards the corporate market, we've got quite a few from the States signing up. I think, you know, there was this initial group of people who came from the UK that we already had contact with, but all of the recent signups have been from the States. And the good thing is that on the premium courses, we have communities attached. So we all learn from each other as well. So you really sort of, you know, you start to hear if it is different or if people have different experiences in different segments of the market. But so far, I think it really is international. It really is. You have to be able to understand English to be able to get something out of the videos, obviously.
Although if they're watching this and they don't understand English, they're...
yeah, exactly. But if you thought, you know, if people found what I'm talking about here relevant, and the things I've been talking about here, then they're definitely going to find the courses useful. You know, at the end of the day, people are people. And I mean, that's actually the subject I've been asked to talk about with Ted, is people talk a lot about cultural differences, but what about cultural similarities? What about the common ground we have of being human and the psychology of what we respond to when somebody speaks? You know, what it is that makes us like them and makes us listen to them, makes us want to like them, despite cultural differences, is an interesting concept. Certainly at the Pro Magic Academy, we are aware of differences in cultures in terms of, for example, how much you can swear and so on stage. In Scandinavia, you can swear like nobody's business. In Denmark, you can be a little bit edgy on the Me Too front, right? Whereas in Sweden, you can't. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of specific things. Maybe that's a new course on the Pro Magic Academy, a little mini course on that could be quite good. What we experience, you know, in the market in India, you know, the response you get from Indian audiences can be different. But at its right down the bottom, if you communicate with power, let's say confidence, with presence, you're there in the room with people and with warmth, so you've got a certain humanness about you and a positive attitude, then people will respond positively. And that is in the depths of our human DNA. And that works across cultures. And then people will accept cultural differences if you communicate in the right way. So in terms of performance, I think we're very international. In terms of the markets and so on as well, the corporate market, very international. In terms of the weddings, the American traditions and the British traditions, and a lot of countries are linked in terms of their traditions with weddings. But obviously, if you've got a country which has very specific wedding traditions, you'll need to adapt it to suit, because, those things. But the wedding course is very specific in terms of exactly the way you can run a day. And obviously you might need to change that for each client. But in the MC course is a little bit less specific because there are such a wide range of corporate events and types of setups. But the basic packages, the way to sell it in, the way to do the discussions with the clients, all of that will take you to the right place, no matter what the culture is. So yeah, I think it's something for everyone.
That's perfect. That's great. And I can't wait to do a follow-up interview and a follow-up video specifically about that Pro Magic Academy, because I think that you guys are doing amazing work. But John, thank you so much for doing this interview. This has been fascinating. I knew it was going to be a good one, and it just exceeded my expectations.
Oh, thank you.
Honestly, anybody who's watched this, this has been a masterclass. And for anybody who has been watching this, the link is down below. Go check out the Pro Magic Academy, because like John said, Paul and John are in a very unique situation where they're teaching you to do something that they are currently doing themselves. It's not like this is information based on 15 years ago. This is stuff that they're doing right now, and they're building a huge community. And I just see, because I'm friends with a lot of people in the academy, they're becoming more successful, more successful, more successful. And that's a testament to what you and Paul have put together. So thank you so much, John. I really appreciate you coming onto Magic TV and sharing your experiences and your knowledge so freely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Great, real pleasure.
No problem. Guys, I want you to leave a comment down below. I'm sure John will see it. Leave a comment down below. And the links are going to be down below, so you can go check out the Pro Magic Academy. And I will be back again very, very soon with another video. But thanks very much for watching. On behalf of John, John, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. See you guys.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel,
Magic TV,
which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.